I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Curious with Josh Peck. Start the show.
Welcome back to the Curious Podcast. My name is Josh Peck and I'm your host, and your name is listener, and that's what you do. You listen. I got nothing to say. Pandemics suck. They're bullshit. And listen, has this, you know, last 10 days taught any of you what it's taught me, which is that, listen, I love my family, but I don't love my, no, I'm kidding. I love my family, but this is, you know, it's close quarters. It's a lot of face to face. And, you know, we're not out on, you know, you can't compare this to the olden times, because if this were, we'd be busy all day doing shit to stay alive. Like, I'm the man, obviously. So I would be on the prairie or on a mountaintop doing some stalking, hunting. So yeah, I would gather, because when it goes hand in hand with hunting, it's gathering. Got to hunt and gather. So I would be, those things are what I would do. And that would be my contribution. And my son is 14 months, so he would just probably be with me, holding my arrows and rooting me on as I got the feed for the night. And my wife would be back at the homestead making butter and churning stuff, probably just doing wife stuff, which is cool and necessary for the house to run right. So it would, yeah. And listen, it wouldn't be ideal. I'm sure we'd be cold a lot. And all that stalking, my feet would hurt, because there's no way that they had Dr. Scholl's or any sort of like good plantar fasciitis insole pads for the shoes then. So yeah, there'd be a lot of blisters. Couple bruised toes. But inevitably, you know, we'd put in a good hard day's work and we'd get into bed and we'd fall into a very deep sleep. But instead, with this pandemic, we just fucking stare at each other all day, stare in each other's faces, and we contemplate ways in which to hurt each other. No, I'm kidding. But we, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot. It's a weird time, a lot of adjusting. But you know what? You don't listen to this podcast for all that sad shit. You don't listen for all that fucking news, 24-hour news media, fucking Instagram. I'm a DJ. Listen to my live DJ. I'm a yoga instructor. Watch my live yoga class. I do Pilates. Look at this live. I made bread. You want to make bread with me? This is how I make a sourdough starter. Fuck that. You don't listen to this podcast for that. You listen to it for this. For the sultry, smooth, dulcet tones of your host, Joshua Michael Peck. And for a little bit of an escape from the day-to-day minutia, the bullshit. And I'm happy to supply that. So I just want you to know that we're all in this together. But if you listen to the Curious Podcast, you're in it just a little bit better. All right. Am I right? I'm right. I know I'm right. I'm fucking right, 100% right. On today's show, Jason Nash. You know him. Jason Nash is a YouTuber, comedian, jack of all trades, very, very funny man who I met when we were both on an app called Vine. And then we reconnected through our mutual friend, David Dobrik. Jason and David have become YouTube superstars. They have a podcast called Views, which crushes it. And they are just a pretty spectacular team. And Jason, David, and I, we all make YouTube with a big friend group of ours on YouTube. So we talk a lot about that. And I just like Jason so much. He's one of the nicest people, and his sort of ascendancy and the way that he's ascension, I'm not going to even try to say it. I'm going to make up a word. So his Chuck Letuck, from where he started as a young comedian working at SNL to now being an absolute social media superstar, I think is fascinating. And we had a really good talk. So can't wait for you guys to hear it. Please enjoy Jason Nash. There he is.
What's up, Josh?
Jason Nash.
Josh Peck, finally.
Are you familiar with podcasting?
Me? I know a thing or two about it, yes. I have my own podcast that I do with my friend, and we've been podcasting for the last 3 years. I also had a podcast in 2006.
I heard that. I did read that.
Yeah.
You were before Joe Rogan.
Yeah, probably around the same time, but yeah.
What did podcasting look like in 2006?
It was just like my buddy built me a website and we just would like, you know, promote it on Twitter and like it didn't go out to too many people, but you know, it's just me and my best friend that I went to college with. And yeah, and that was it. It was fun. I at that time I'd really gotten into Howard Stern. Mm. And so then I want to try something like that. You know, like it's so much fun. Like to me, he's number one. Out of like all entertainers.
What was the interactions like? Like, did you have were people listening?
Yeah. I would say we were getting maybe like 10,000 people listening or something like that.
But then that's huge.
It was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was based on, I had just had kids. So it was like two dads talking about their kids mostly is what we talked about, being married and stuff like that and some funny stuff. And then my friend had a brother who used to do the technical stuff. And he was kind of like a character on it. He was like a pot smoking, very kind of used to just shit on everything. So that was like a big part of the show too. It was like just listening to him come in and be negative, and it was kind of funny. Like
you need
people
that guy.
Enjoyed that. Yeah, you need that guy. Yeah.
So here we are sitting in your, would you call it palatial?
Well,
stunning.
I mean, it is a 2-bedroom.
Brand
with a converted
home.
Garage that we call, so we call it 3. The city of California, city of Los Angeles calls it 2.
But what do they
bedroom.
Know?
But what do they know? My son is, he kind of hits his head in his bedroom because it's so small and the ceilings are so low. But yeah,
he's a large kid.
Yeah.
He's no shorty.
He's 5'11 and
14?
Yeah, he's 14 years old and he's 5'11.2 inches. Almost, he'll be taller than me soon by the summer, I think.
But here we are in your brand new, beautiful home.
Yes.
And I would say to you,
yeah.
What a difference 3 years makes.
I know.
Can you believe your life?
No, I can't believe it at all. It's crazy. Like, it's almost like I hit the lottery.
Just.
It's like I went into a Quickie Mart and did a pick six. And then like the next day. The ticket was in my jeans and I'd forgotten about it. And then my mother was like, hey, we played the lottery the other day. They said the winner was in Studio City. We should take a look. Wow. No, it couldn't be, Ma.
No, no way.
And then, you know, you pull it out and you're like, wow.
I mean, it's as if like the first year you won a scratcher and it was nice, but it was like 30 grand.
Yeah.
And then the next year, 2018, it was the state lotto. You're uh-huh. like, this is better.
Yeah.
Than the last year, Powerball.
Yeah. But let's be clear for people that are listening who don't know who I am. It's a very small house in Studio City. I mean, I'm not living in a mansion. I have a roof over my head, which from how you're looking at it is amazing because you're right. Because before I couldn't even afford a place to live. So in that regard, yes, I am like, wow, I can't believe I'm a homeowner and all that. Yeah. But I don't have like a Bentley in my driveway.
No.
A Tesla.
I have half a Bentley. No, I mean it as like, you know, the one thing, and I'll give everyone the spiel in the intro, but so many of my listeners, you know us. But the one thing that I love about our friend David Dobrik, I think it possibly could be the most.
Sure.
Was that he walked into a stand-up comedy club 3.5 years ago.
Yeah.
Into Flappers at Burbank.
Yeah. Hollywood Improv.
Hollywood Improv, fine.
Sure.
No need to show off.
No, but it was the little room.
The little room.
Yeah.
So what are we talking? 50? 50?
50 seats. Solid. 20 people sitting.
And he saw someone who for years, I mean, and we'll go through it. You have had the support of a murderer's row of like smart, creative, comedic, super successful people who all knew how good you were. And he was the one, this like...
My mom's opening a Pepsi.
Is it a Pepsi?
La Croix.
Great.
It's a Sprite.
It's a Sprite. We're keeping it Boston up in here.
She's got to have the Sprite once in a while. She doesn't drink them a lot.
It's refreshing.
But I like that's her treat. Maybe once a week she cracks a can of Sprite and you know it settles her stomach.
Ugh.
And yeah.
You had a 7-Up recently?
7-Up. Now listen, that'll settle your stomach.
What a ride.
Oh my God. 7-Up's delicious.
Man.
Yeah. I like Sprite too.
I like a nice fountain drink.
I love the machines they have now where you can mix and match whatever flavor you want. That's the best. You can get the Dasani sparkling, put a little high C juice in there as well.
Great.
I go with my kids and that's like, well, it's one of their favorite things to do.
When you're at, you know, Five Guys or something.
Five Guys.
You really want to live it up.
The pizza place in Sherman Oaks has it. Oh my God. What a treat. I might have to go tonight.
Treat yourself.
Yeah.
But like one day I want one of those in my house, Richie Rich style. But like, but this, you know, 19-year-old knucklehead kid from Vernon Hills.
Yeah, he was 20.
20.
At the time.
Walks into this comedy club, sees you perform and goes, I know what to do with you.
Yeah.
And 3.5 years later, you guys are the biggest thing ever.
It's really lucky. We owe it all to David. David did it all. And he's a genius, you know. He's really good at what he does and. So we're all just holding on.
Well.
For dear life until the next Messiah comes.
Well, I'm glad you got the, you know, the bullet points that the David Dobrik Corporation.
Yeah. What I'm supposed to say. No, I'm not supposed to say anything. I do say that. The thing about it is our relationship's really funny because I love him.
Yes.
I do love him. And I love him so much. I love him as a friend. I love him as a son. I love him as, you know, I want to see him succeed. You know, I told him a long time ago, I said, I'm here to make you look good. Mm. That's it. I said, I am here to make you look good. Whatever it is we have to do that's going to push you further. Because I think of him as the same thing as Wyatt, you know, like, so.
But he was the Lorne Michaels to your...
Yeah.
Bill Hader. He's the Scorsese here, De Niro. He unlocked you. And it doesn't work. Like if you were a nice guy, but you didn't have the goods.
Right.
God bless David. He's a sweetheart. But a couple months in, he would have been like, we got to upgrade here.
Yeah. Of course.
You had the goods and he knew. Because wouldn't you say like, it's one thing, everyone needs their Scottie Pippen. Like they need their guy who's going to be the one who like- can elevate them to the next thing. And I think he saw that in you.
Yeah, I don't know if he saw, I don't know what he saw. You know, he's also not somebody that will tell you either. I'll probably go to my grave never knowing exactly what he thinks. You know, I don't know.
What do you mean?
Like, I don't know what, you know, he's not somebody that would ever sit here and go, hey, you're my Scottie Pippen or, you know, like from the outsider's perspective, I think that's a great analogy. Wow, like I'm very thrilled that you said that. But you know, he's a kid. He's a kid making YouTube videos. And he, you know, what I think just came down to editing. All those years, I just needed somebody that would know how to edit me.
Right.
You know, and that's what he knows. He has a lot of skills, but one of his best skills is knowing how to edit and knowing when the bit's over.
Yes.
Whereas my version of that YouTube video I would have made would be 4 minutes. It's only 20 seconds in his video. And then people were like, oh, that guy's great because he was only there for 20 seconds. So that's really the key to anybody that's out there trying to do something great. Like editing is so important, you know?
Do you think that there's, I feel like you and I, because we come from that old guard of movies and television, which was like, I got another one in me, boss.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What else do you need? I'm here for the team.
Yeah.
And he was he's so refreshingly unencumbered by any of those old rules.
No, not at all. Yeah, you're right. He doesn't know the old rules.
Right.
He doesn't know a lot of things in general. you know, there's celebrities that like come up and he's like, who's that? Who's this? And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe. But yeah, he just, you know, the best thing about him too is he doesn't have any ego about anything. I used to be in a comedy troupe and I was with these two guys, great guys. And we spent most of the time fighting over what joke was the best and what thing was funniest. And he doesn't care where the idea comes from. He's just like, oh, it's just the best thing. You know, he doesn't need to be the center of attention. And that's really served him well, I think, where it's just like, oh, it's Josh being funny this week. Okay, great. Yes. No problem. It's Jason being funny this week. Okay, great. Don't care. You know, and that's like a beautiful thing to see. It's so refreshing. That's why when I left stand-up comedy and acting and I started doing YouTube, it was so refreshing. Because it was like you would go and help Zane Hijazi, who's a friend of ours. And Zane's not, he's really funny, but he's not about all about him. It doesn't need to be all about him. He's there directing. He's there telling you like, oh, you know, like he's letting his friend Matt King be like, Matt King will steal an entire Zane video. He's just so funny. You know, and that's like so refreshing. I was like, oh wow, this is so sick. Like no one cares, and I spent so much time with, like just with other comics, like me, and talking about me and me, and it's just like, ugh, it's so gross. I hated it. I was so exhausted by stand-up comedians going to clubs and just, ugh.
What's that? It seems in a weird way with podcasting that the environment for comedians has become more nurturing over the last couple of years. There's not as much of that backstabbing. But what, in your heyday of being at those stand-up clubs, what was it like? Because it seems like a fucking cesspool.
I literally was around during the time when it was like, yeah, people like wanted to get on Letterman. And then that was basically it. Maybe you'd get like a premium blend on Comedy Central, which was like they take a bunch of stand-ups and put them in. But that was basically it. Or a special. You could get a special on Comedy Central. But by the time you got a special on like HBO or something, you'd have to be really far down the line and like really polished doing it for 10 years. And to just to get back to David too, I thought it was interesting too, is like, I would love to hear what he would say about this, but I know that when he walked into the club, he, you know, we were paired perfectly because he had this need for 3 videos a week and like a lot of content. And I was just desperate and broke, you know? So it was like, I remember he called me and the next day after I did a bit with him and he was like, oh, he texted me that night, like, oh, what are you doing tomorrow? And I was like, I never thought I'd hear from him again. And then I was like, I'm around, I'm not doing anything actually. And then that was it. And I was like, oh, this is great. So it was fun.
I think too, because what was that, like September of 2016?
Yeah, I think it was right around November 2016. I remember Vine died. My movie came out and Vine died on the same day. And my movie did horrible the day it came out.
What was that? FML?
Yeah, it was a movie called FML that I made. And like no one downloaded it. And I was like, oh man, this is awful. Like I worked on this for a long time. And then Vine died. And then I started installing speakers with my friend. And I remember the first day I went to install speakers, I was like, you know what? Like, this is great. I'm like, I don't have to think. I don't have to be creative. I'm going to go hang out with my friend, install the speakers. I would like paint walls and stuff. And then I came home that night and it was Halloween and I saw my ex-wife. I'm like, I love it. I love manual labor. I'm like, this is great. This is fine. I'll be fine doing this. And then I went back the next day and I was like, this is fucking awful. Like, I hate this so much.
So, the veneer had worn off after 8 hours.
My ex-wife still razzes me about that. She's like, remember when you were so happy working manual labor for 24 hours? I was like, oh yeah.
Well, every actor, I feel like any artist, like, because it's what eternally all we're doing is playing dress up. Let's not get it twisted, right?
Right, right.
So when you see like any, that's what kills me, where you'll see like some famous person who's like, I'm just really into horses right now and working on the farm. And I'm like, yeah, today. Like right. Until that's done in like a week and a half and you're back to like Barbados hanging out with Beyonce. Like, stop it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's part of acting is you gotta believe and you gotta be really into yourself too to be an actor. You gotta go out there and believe that like, hey, I'm the guy or I'm the girl, you know? So I think all that's part of it. I don't get too mad at actors. I think it's a pretty hard job.
I mean,
I do. I think it's hard, but you've done a lot more acting than me. So maybe you'd say otherwise.
No, I would say it's really hard.
I think it's stressful. You know,
I think it's, you know, I hate when people do like those false equivalencies, like, you know, it's not, you know, we're not out here curing cancer. Yeah, no one is, unless you're actually fucking curing cancer. And it's like,
Dr. Reza said, I am.
Right.
I am.
I actually am. I work at Sloan Kettering and I'm in a lab 8 to 10 hours a day.
It's actually serious work.
But, you know, it's like any of these sort of self-driven quests, right? The challenging part is that there's really no promises. Uh-huh. And especially for guys like you and I, where it was never guaranteed, especially early on. And I think why I have so much respect for you and people like us is like, I love a journeyman. I love a utility player.
Yeah.
You know, like someone who's like, I'm here to support the team. I'm good. Like, I might not be fucking Jeter, but right. Not everyone's Jeter.
Not everyone's Jeter.
But like, if you need a fucking double in the seventh inning,
yeah.
I'm your man.
I'm good for a double, maybe. Yeah. Under pressure. Yeah. That's kind of how I look at it. Like, I'm just really happy to be a part of that group of people that make content and help everybody as much as I can. And then David's like, he's just great to work with. You know, I mean, you just know how funny he is. He's really, really, really funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wish people could see how funny he is, like not off the vlog, you know what I mean? Cause he's like just so much fun to hang out with.
Do you think that,
So when he comes up with an idea or I come up with an idea, then that process of execution is the best. Like that's like the other day, like he came up with this idea. He was just standing looking at his backyard and he was like, bro, we should bury you. We should bury you. We should bury you alive. And I was like, oh, that's really funny. He's like, he came up with the whole thing. And so then my assistant Dima sat out there, dug a hole. They covered me. And then they covered my head. And then when people would walk along, he had like a picnic, and then we'd raise it. And I'd be like, hey, you know, it's a really dumb idea, but it worked great. So just that whole process was once you have like a good idea, that's the best part of the job for sure.
Well, it's interesting too. And to David's credit, and I think I remember that one of these bits specifically was that it was you and I, and I don't think I'm pulling the curtain back too far, but it was you and I dressed up like Big Bird and Cookie Monster in a Ferrari on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
And we really did get pulled over by the police.
Yes.
But David didn't catch it.
Oh, I don't remember. So he didn't.
We got pulled over by the police.
Yeah. Did it not go in the video?
And it didn't get in the video. And David was sprinting to catch this part of the video.
Oh, yeah.
And it was unfortunate because he could tell already because he's so many steps ahead.
Yeah.
He said, that's our tag. That would have been incredible from this ridiculous moment where people are losing their mind on Hollywood Boulevard looking at us.
Yeah.
And then within an hour, he had contacted someone with a police car.
Yeah.
And set it up so that we could sort of recreate it.
Uh-huh.
And it was done. And he didn't rest on it. He didn't say, all right, let's figure this out and we'll, you know, sort of let the air out of it for a couple of days and we'll figure out the best way to go about it. It was like, here's the fix. We got to get a police car. And within an hour, it was done. And
yes,
we had this
yes.
Perfect button.
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. Yeah.
And he just figured out how to finish it.
It's the way he does it. He's really good.
So you're from Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. Grew up in the suburbs, Medfield, Massachusetts. Went to UMass. Moved to New York City when I was 20. Had an internship in New York City at Saturday Night Live. Worked for Norm Macdonald. Worked for David Spade.
You're getting way too ahead of me. I'm ready to dig in New England. Baby.
You want to go back to New England? Okay.
So you're in New England.
Marshall's, Framingham Mall.
Beautiful.
Waiting for my mom. My mom was a makeup lady. I used to sit there and wander the mall until she was done in work.
Your stunning mother, Lorraine.
Now I love perfume on any woman.
What's not to love?
Yeah.
Do you have a particular brand?
No, not really. But anytime I smell perfume, I'm like,
You know what a girl once did for me?
What?
I was dating this girl. I don't want to say where, but we were dating.
Sure.
And I was leaving. I was working on this project for a couple months. And so I was going to go back to LA. And her gift to me when I left was a t-shirt from the town where we were shooting. And she had sprayed her perfume all over the t-shirt.
Oh, wow.
So that I could have like this Pavlovian response of smelling the shirt when she wasn't there.
Oh, wow.
It's like,
it's an interesting move.
Donna.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is actually kind of I had some respect.
You like that?
Yeah, it was just like, here, something to remember me by, like quite literally. You don't seem as impressed.
I'm trying to think if I would like it or if I think it's psychotic.
It's maybe a little bit.
Don't forget me, fucker. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's cool.
So you grew up with a sister,
yep,
your mom.
My sister, my mom, my dad.
And they were together?
Yeah, my parents were together until I was like 12. And then I was overweight. I was like sort of funny in school, I guess, like kind of, but definitely not like, I remember when they voted for class clown, I didn't get it. And I was really upset.
Did you get funnier after the divorce?
I got most outgoing.
Oh, please. If only they knew.
The worst one to get.
God.
Actually won most outgoing and most talkative. And then they brought me to the principal's office and they're like, look, you can't have two superlatives. You got to pick one. So I was like, most talkative. I don't know if I want to be most talkative.
You always got to ditch most talkative.
As I ditch that one.
That's an easy choice.
Yeah.
Did you get funnier after the divorce?
I don't know. I don't know if I was funny or not. I thought I was funny, but like a lot of my friends were, everybody in Boston's funny. Everybody in Boston, so far, all my friends were funny.
Seinfeld.
Every single one of them.
Seinfeld talks about that. He's like, we were all funny when
yeah.
we grew up.
Yeah. I thought I was funny, but I guess certainly once I did stand up for the first time, I was quickly reminded that I'm not.
Well, Joe Rogan has a bit about Boston and why he thinks people are funnier just because it's a really tough place to live.
Oh, really? Is that what he says?
Yeah, because he's from there. And he
yes,
says,
he is. I know. Yeah, that's true. I love Joe Rogan.
Just when you're working your balls off, like a lot of blue collar jobs.
I don't know if
it's
a tough
weather.
Place to live.
He said, I mean, I guess.
I guess it is.
It's cold.
I guess because it's cold. But no doubt, there's so many funny people from Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So, but then you sort of fit that mold, right? A little bit of that cliche, like, you know, funny being born out of like not the perfect home life, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely like having like a really macho father. And then having like an overdoting mother that certainly probably created like this, like.
She's listening, by the way, about 8 feet from us.
Like my mother's like the most amazing woman in the world. And then still to this day, when strangers meet her, new people have been meeting her because now she's in the videos and new people meet her all the time. And they're just like, you know, your mother is unreal. And I'm like, I know. I don't know what to say. She's just the best. She's just like. She'll sit and anybody can start talking to my mother and my mother will tune right in to what's going on with that person and make them feel like $1 million. Like, especially because so many of us are, all you guys are a lot younger than us. And I think that, you know, when you're 20s and something, maybe you're out in LA, maybe you're not lost, but I think everybody's lost in a way. And so they look at my mom and they talk to her and they're like, they just instantly feel better. She just has this amazing ability to make everyone around them feel great. Like I saw her talking to Vardon the other, like a few months ago for like an hour. just Vardon, in this intense conversation, explain who Vardon is.
Our 13-year-old Armenian friend, sort of...
His brother does YouTube, and he's, like, really funny on camera, so he's fallen into YouTube. Actually, he has his own YouTube channel. What am I saying? He has, like, 500,000 subscribers.
He made $40,000 last year.
Yeah, on Cameo.
He's 11.
He's just like this 13-year-old kid who's really, really funny and probably going to go on to really big things. But even Vardon, as a 13-year-old kid, he came up to me like, "Oh my God, your mother, Jason, she's just the best. She talks to me. She made me feel so much better. She made me, you know, I'm going to start losing weight, you know, and try not to eat so much." And
he could just appreciate it.
I
even
wish
at
she
13.
Was my grandmother. You know, just so it's stuff like that is nice. Yeah.
What's a great story? I mean, you've been sort of public about your relationship with your dad and it not
sure.
always being the most harmonious thing.
My dad's a great guy. My dad, literally, if he walked in right now, you'd be like, "Oh my God, this dude is the best. Let me hang out with Bob Nash." So cool. Captain of the football team, really strong, 6'3", good looking, muscular, big, broad shoulders, deep voice. Bob Nash.
Yeah, like, did he own like a car dealership?
He should've. He should have. He could have owned a car dealership. He probably could have done a million things with himself. And but he when I was growing up, he was like, you know, he had a lot of bad things happen to him. Basically, his partner was murdered by the mob. And then so we went from having money when I was little, to having no money, to being like on the street. And so that probably made me the way I am too. Like, I'm very like, I'm not sentimental. I'm not like, if David called me right now and was like, "Hey, I'm done working together," I'd be like, "Great, I'm done. I'm ready. I'm ready to go." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have no roots in anything and I have no expectations for anything. I'm ready for this house to burn down right now. I'm ready for, you know, my YouTube channel to die.
How's that work for you in relationships?
Wow, that's really good. That was really good. Probably really bad.
Same here.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you're probably similar, you know, where it's like you got the acting job, Josh, you're on hold. Maybe you're going to get it, or maybe you do the pilot and it doesn't go.
I mean, even deeper than that, I didn't have a dad.
Right.
So that kind of informs you that if the most important person in your life can leave, anybody can leave. And thus better that you don't become invested in anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, 100%. 100%. So yeah. So my dad, he's just like, he was just, you know, really angry growing up. But I'm 46 years old. I've dealt with all of that. I think I called him once and I said, "Hey, I'm over all this." And he was like, "Okay." And he took me for a walk once in Martha's Vineyard. He was like, "Hey, I'm really, 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 really sorry."
Interesting.
For everything.
What was that?
It was weird. Like, we were like renting a house in on the beach or whatever. I don't know what we were doing. And he's like, "Can I take you for a walk?" Which he would never do that, you know? And I was like, "Yeah, sure."
Uh-oh.
I kind of knew it was coming. And then he just apologized. And that made it all better. So for anybody that's like, I don't know, it's saying sorry really works.
What do you think that was born out of from him?
I think he probably maybe saw some of my stand-up material and probably was like, "Oh yeah, maybe it wasn't the best." And I don't know if my mother put him up to it or he did it on his own, but yeah, he just said he was sorry and I'm done with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm also the kind of person that like feels for the murderer too. You know what I mean? Like, when I see the murderer get arrested on TV, I'm like, "Oh, it's going to suck for him tonight in that fucking jail cell."
Oh, I'm that
even
way
though
too.
He murdered somebody.
I know. Cause we're slightly psychopathic, I think.
I guess. I mean, but don't you feel bad for everybody? I feel bad for Dima, like my assistant. I'm like, he went and got my daughter Pinkberry last night. And I really didn't want to go get Pinkberry. And sure. Dima, he did it. He was like, "I'll go get it." And he went and got her Pinkberry, made her so happy. But I felt bad. I was like, "Oh, fuck, poor Dima."
I think that's like a prerequisite of being an assistant in LA. How quickly can you return the Pinkberry and or Yogurtland?
Yogurtland's good too.
So can you track when comedy really became a commodity for you, when it really became a value?
Probably when I would moved a bunch of schools and I moved to this new school and I didn't have any friends. And I went and everybody had to give this Martin Luther King speech.
What does that mean?
Everybody had to give the I Have a Dream speech.
Like, repeat it?
Everybody had to, like, stand up in front of the school and do it. I can't remember if everyone had to do it or I had to do it.
Solid.
But I think everybody had to do it. And mine was really good. And so I probably, when I did that, that won me a lot of friends. Like, oh, he, you know, he likes to have fun, or he likes to perform. I remember when I was in kindergarten, we did like a little circus play, and they made me the ringleader. Mm. And I remember being like, oh, cool. Yeah. That's the job I wanted.
Yeah. I want top billing.
I want top billing. I want to run everything. You know, I want to say everything. 'Cause you know, everyone else doesn't care. But I was there like, oh yeah, this is like the really fun spot to
be. I've always thought of myself as a P.T. Barnum.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, so those are two moments that I remember. And just like moving to new schools and like, you know, trying to make friends quickly. Just be like, oh, you know? And then looking back, like I don't know if I got lucky or if I was good at it, but I always had friends. I would always be like, and you know what? My mother would facilitate that too. If I moved to a new school or if like, If my mother would be like, I'll drive and pick up from the movies if you want. And then the kids would be like, whoa, your mom's going to drive and pick up?
God bless that mom.
Yeah. And so it's my mom's phone.
Take your time, Lorraine.
My mom, my daughter.
She almost spilled her Sprite.
My daughter, Charlie, is starting to do impersonations of my mom.
Is that the best?
Which is what my sister and I grew up on. My sister and I would just impersonate my mom because she was so funny. And my daughter has one, and it's like, it's almost there. She's working on it. But she picked up on how my mom, she does voice memo. Mm. Not voice memo. What do you call it? Dictation.
Yes.
So she dictates to my—
Talk to text.
Yeah. So we're in Boston. She'll go, at the Natick Mall, period. On our way, period. Going to pick up legal seafoods, period. Love you. Can't wait to see you, period. And like my daughter picked up on that little thing and I was like, that's good. I was like, that's good. Like, oh, wow.
First of all, legal
that's
seafood.
Fun. That's the best part of fatherhood. If your kids like, you know, like you in any way, you share that. Ugh.
When they clue in to like—
Yeah.
That's got to be a revelatory moment when your child has their first bit of like adult humor.
Yes.
Right?
We were watching The Bachelor last night and she goes, my daughter turns to me and she goes, I like love, hate this show. And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, I love it, but I also hate it because it's so stupid. But I love to watch it because it's so stupid. I was like, yes, exactly. That's
great
it.
Observation.
You got it. We were driving home from, we went out to, we drove to Thousand Oaks the other day to look at some furniture because my mom, she found some furniture out there. So we took my daughter and then my mom's just so happy to be with us. So we went and we ate at Lazy Dog and like filled my mother's belly, which is like always puts her in a good mood. So then like my daughter and I, we put her in the car. My daughter and I are really tired and my mom was just talking a mile a minute on the way home. She rode by on the 101. There's like, it's like the auto mile. She goes, ooh, Thousand Oaks. She goes, there must be some money out here. Mercedes. She calls up all the dealerships. Mercedes, Lexus, Toyota,
BMW.
Subaru,
yeah.
BMW. She called up. We were dying.
Oh, that's just good.
Yeah. So stuff like that. That's the best stuff.
So you sort of notice these things early on of like you picking up this comedic stuff. Is there a thought that you're going to go into it professionally or was there another path that you had in mind?
Yeah. I was growing up in Boston and I was like, I would watch Saturday Night Live and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm like, this is like everything to me. I was really into baseball and stuff and basketball and stats. I knew all the stats. And then one day I woke up and I was like, I don't care about any of this. I don't care.
Yeah.
And then my uncle, who was like, used to quiz me on stats, I saw him one time. He's like, well, how about them Red Sox? I was like, haven't watched at all. He was like, what? So that's just like sacrilege
off,
in Boston.
Dan.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I remember I was like scared to tell my parents. I was like, I want to be a comedian and I want to go get this internship at Saturday Night Live. And they were like, what? No, what? I told them both at the same time. They were like, are you crazy?
Right.
Yeah.
Because you guys didn't know anyone who was in— I mean, you had no connection to the business.
None.
It's a pipe dream.
None. Oh, complete pipe dream. And that was like before the internet too. So the internet's made it so now where it's like, oh yeah, it's a celebrity. Like, sure, you can probably go to LA and get a job as an intern with the Kardashians. That's probably not a big deal. But back then it was like, oh no, it's showbiz people. We could never do that.
Right.
You know, and then I went to Saturday Night Live.
So you graduate college?
Okay, so I hadn't graduated college. I had great friends in college. I was like loving life in college. I went to a state school. Like did okay in school, like not great. And then I was like, I'm going to go work at NBC in New York. And I remember I went and I interviewed at Dateline to be an intern.
Huge.
Huge.
I mean, of all the hour-long news programs, that's the one.
Oh, and then my mother, this is a funny story. My mother put a suit on me. She was like, you got to look good. You got to look good going into Saturday Night Live interview.
Of course.
So she put me in like a really like nice suit. And then, of course, when you get to Saturday Night Live, you realize no one wears suits.
They're all schleps.
Yeah, literally the person interviewing is in sneakers or whatever. So I looked really stupid. And I remember I went in and interviewed and I was like, I love comedy. I don't know what I said. Blah, 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 blah.
Are you an NBC page?
I wasn't a page. No, I was an intern.
What are the pages?
That's a page program. Mm. So that's like a program that you got to wear the suit and I never did the page program. I didn't want to dress up in the suit.
And they move you around from departments around 30 Rock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you at that time, you could work on Conan, you could work with SNL. I remember NBC Sports was a big thing. There were a lot of pages that did that. The Today Show, that was really big if you had that job. Because we were all kids there and then a lot of people wanted to go into journalism. Some wanted to go into comedy. And I remember they called me in. They're like, oh, like you got it. You got it. You got the internship, which at the time I was like, oh my God. But really it's not that big of a deal. They're not paying me.
Right.
You know what I mean? But then at the time, and then you go back to school and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to be working at Saturday Night Live. And everyone's like, what? No fucking way. Are you kidding me? And then I remember like, I didn't have enough money to go. Like I couldn't afford an apartment in New York or whatever. And I remember, my mother, I was like, well, I'm not going to go. And then my mother, like, I don't know, somehow she's like, no, you're going. She's like, we're going to find the money somehow. And I live with this ballet dancer. I paid $900 a month for 3 months. We lived in a railroad apartment. So I basically stayed on this guy's couch. He was really weird. He had thousands of magnets all over the kitchen. And one time I knocked one of the magnets off and then I looked for it for like 20 minutes. I didn't see where it was. And then I got there was a note when I came home the next day. He was like, where is the choo-choo train magnet? So he was just like, he was crazy in like that New York way.
Weird.
And that was my first like, you know, and I would just walk to 30 Rock. And
What year was this?
This was, see, I graduated school in 91. No, sorry. I graduated school in 95. So it was fall of 94. So fall of 94 was like Sandler, Spade,
Chris Rock,
Farley. Chris Rock was already gone.
Okay.
But he was around. He would come and like maybe like chill with Sandler or whatever. I never talked to Chris Rock, but nice guy, I'm sure. And then I went back to school that spring, and then in 95, 96 I worked for Norm.
And what's the energy like for those 3 months with Sandler? I mean, that was
it's so hard because you're like, I was already such a fan of Adam Sandler and Spade and all of them. It was like, and not only that, but like Sandler's the coolest.
And are you,
Nicest guy.
Yeah. How are they treating interns?
So funny, like the staff of SNL would treat the interns like shit, but like the cast treated the interns really well.
Yeah.
You know, like they would come up and they'd like stand there, you know, Spade would be like, oh, like run down and get me this or whatever and buy yourself something. Just like shit like that. Like they couldn't have been nicer. And all those guys.
What's the schedule like, right? So it's everything kind of gets on its feet. What's the pitch meetings on a Monday or a Tuesday?
Yeah, they would go, they would write Monday and Tuesday. The host would come in on Tuesday. So let's say the host is like, I don't want to date myself. Let's say the host is Alec Baldwin.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah. At the time, like, I remember Alec Baldwin was a host once, Julianne Moore, Jean-Claude. I never was there for Jean-Claude Van Damme, but he did host. So let's say it's Alec Baldwin. So Alec Baldwin's the host. He comes in Tuesday night and he goes from room to room to room and he's like, hi. And then they'll sort of gang write. They'll be like Josh will be like, well, I have this idea. Let's say you're a writer. I have this idea. It's a, you know, fireman sketch. And you'll grab two people and then you'll work on that for like an hour. And then all the scripts go in. And then on Wednesday morning at like 10 o'clock, SNL is like, you know, they have like really nice food and people just pack into this writer's room with tons of seats. Like you can't even move. There's 100 people, there's production people, whatever, sets. And then Lorne sits there at the head of the table with the host. The cast sits around the table and they
welcome back, guys.
Yep.
We had a great week.
Literally.
Let's get it started.
And it starts like that. He doesn't talk a lot. He doesn't, not from my memory. It's literally like that. Like, we're great hostess Alec Baldwin. Let's read sketch number one. Like, that's literally it. That's my memory, at least. And then they
read. And you do a table read.
They do a table read. They read through 70 sketches that are five or six pages long each.
Wow.
And then, you know, stuff dies there. You watch it all die. And then, Lorne goes in to his office with the host. And I've never been privy to that meeting, but I'm assuming the host says, hey, I really like this. I really like this. This killed. And I'm sure Lorne goes, this killed. And then he makes a board and all the writers go in and they look like high school to see what made it, what's going to go to dress. So then that's Wednesday night. Maybe they take it easy. They stay up all night Tuesday night. And then Thursday, when I would get to work, I would get there really early and already it was like hammering, building sets, you know, stuff happening. Thursday they block, Friday they block, Saturday they block again, dress rehearsal. And then, you know, I remember like probably like four or five things, maybe three or four things get cut before it goes to air. So they do a dress and a live show.
Right.
And that's it.
Because I've heard you hear people.
And then the party after.
Oh, we'll get there. Because you hear people say like, I had a sketch and on Wednesday crushed and literally crushed every single day. And then it dressed 3 hours before we went live. It just didn't take off.
Yeah.
And they cut it.
Yeah. I would see that too. I would see stuff that was like really funny and then the audience doesn't like it. And
it's a wrap. I don't know.
And that's for anything, for any bit that you think is going to, even a stand-up bit, you think this, when I went on tour last year, like there's stuff that some nights it kills. And then you're like, try it again. You're like, oh, nope.
Yeah.
Not tonight. I don't know. I guess that's the weird thing about comedy too. I've never been able to, we're still trying to figure out like what works.
I want to stay on SNL, but what can you attribute that to when a bit crushes in one place and then doesn't in the other, right? Because the easiest thing is to say the audience, right?
Yeah.
We love to blame the audience.
I never do that, by the way. The audience.
I do sometimes.
I mean, I don't know why some, you know what, I guess I'm still kind of a novice because I don't know. I don't know why I was in North Carolina one night and then the next night I'm in Pennsylvania and the same thing. It's just like, I don't know why.
I think it depends on like,
the Sklars have a theory. They told me once, the Sklar brothers, who are really brilliant. You need perfect conditions for comedy.
Ah.
They said, and the temperature's got to be right in the room. It's got to be the right ceiling, the right depth. So anyways, that's one of their theories.
I mean, you have to go to your audience, right? Like you have to meet them where they are and not expect them to come to you.
Yeah.
So I'll find when I do college gigs.
Yeah.
If it's like a super heady, smarty pants school, then it's a specific, probably more nuanced, less pushing type performance. Cause I know that they're dialed in and they're also in their heads.
Mm-hmm.
So it offers an opportunity for me to adapt. Whereas if I go to a school that's a little bit more of a party school, less academic, rowdier crowd.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, then that's something that you've definitely figured out.
I think you have to, inevitably you have to adapt it a little, but I just did two college gigs in a row, Friday night and Saturday. Friday I was in Kirksville, Missouri. And
wow.
And Saturday I was at UC San Diego. And you know, I have my college gigs, which is like an hour of stand-up, but you know, I definitely have at least about half an hour of stuff, which is just sort of old stories and bits that I know that they'll love.
Right.
And when I went to Kirksville, I hadn't performed in like 4 months.
Right.
And it went great. It went fine. But like I could tell it felt a little sweaty because I was nervous.
Yeah.
I was rusty. So yeah. I was pushing bits and I could feel myself not listening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that, you know, they see you where you're trying to push the agenda instead of being in this great push-pull with them. Mm-hmm. Whereas the next day, I felt so settled in. I was like, you know how to do this. You know these bits work.
Right.
And it just felt, and maybe it just felt better for me. But I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was better the next day.
Uh-huh.
Because I just was a little more settled.
Uh-huh.
And not so sweaty trying to like run, you know, chase the laugh because I have to remember that I am funny and this shit does work. God damn
right,
it.
Right, right.
You know, I think and Norm is one of the greatest at this is like
the best
feeling confident in like this material works. I'll let you figure out how funny I am.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm not going to chase you.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's probably who I learned from the most just watching him. Like, I would go watch him do one time. He just went up on stage. He just did bird calls because the jokes weren't hitting. So he just would call off different birds. He's also really smart. He says he's dumb in his act, but he actually reads a ton of, and he's a very smart person. So he knew like all these birds and he would, you know, just stuff like that. Like, he just doesn't give a fuck.
How did you two get paired up?
Oh man, I don't know. I have no idea. I was just answering phones and he would just, you know, he would just walk up there with like, literally you could still smoke in the building. He'd be like, hey. And he would just, you know, a lot of those guys, when they were on the show, they would come around and test material out on the PAs or the interns or whatever. Like, you still, it's, you know, being a comedian is so vulnerable. Like, it's such a vulnerable spot. Like, so he, you know, they would, Will Ferrell would literally put on a pair of glasses and, you know, he would do this character Ron with like an ascot and he would just walk around I think he just did like a little thing on YouTube about it. What was really funny about that character he would do is he never intended it to even be like on the show. He just wanted to like create like a vibe. That's what he says, at least. You should watch that YouTube video. And it worked because it made everybody like love him, and it definitely like loosened up everybody because everybody was very stressed there or whatever. So yeah, when I was answering phones, Norm would come up and tell jokes or try to be like, and I laughed. I thought he was so funny. So I think that's why he kept me around.
You have a great laugh.
Yeah,
too.
I love to laugh. And so I think he, because I remember when I left SNL and I went back to like watch a show and I was in the office with Norm and he told some jokes and I didn't laugh, you know, because I hadn't seen everybody in a while. And I remember he turned to me and he's like, what the hell? He used to laugh. They like a big deal now because you work at MTV. Hey, this guy used to laugh a lot. Now he's too big. He's too cool to laugh.
That's so Norm.
So Norm, yeah.
Just attacking someone for their lack of laughter.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Do you ever have to put in any bets for him?
No, I was never, he never clued me in on any of that. I remember a lot going on and I remember trying to ask him like, is you okay? Is there gambling going on? And I remember him being like, don't worry about it.
He loves to gamble.
I guess, but I was never privy to any of that. But I remember hearing that he was gambling a lot. You know, as an intern, they didn't really, I wasn't like, you know, the main person getting all the information there.
You know, it's interesting. Sandler was on, I don't know if you heard him on Howard promoting Uncut Gems, which have you seen Uncut Gems?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Jason, it's the fucking best.
Yeah, everyone says it's so good.
I'll just give a free promo for Uncut Gems.
Good for him.
He's the best. And what blew
so nice.
It blew my mind because I didn't realize this. And he talked about it on Howard. He's like, I was fired from SNL.
Oh, yeah, I did see this.
Yeah. And because the head of NBC didn't like me, Farley, or Spade.
Yeah.
That we were like these weird outliers in the cast, even though they were crushing.
Yeah.
And we didn't get asked back. And did you see any of that? Like,
no, I remember that Farley and Spade were off doing movies and stuff. And they were gone. And then they would come back to like maybe appear in a couple sketches on a Saturday or something that people had written for them. That was my memory. I remember Sandler like also maybe being gone doing movies and stuff. So maybe that pissed, I don't want to speak out of school, but maybe that pissed NBC off.
Yeah.
That Lauren had like sent them off to movies. I don't know. I can't imagine why you would fire those three. Because to me, they were like the funniest.
Widely considered some of the greats.
The greatest. And And Farley too. I didn't spend, he was gone a lot making movies, so I didn't spend that much time with him. But when I ever, the few times I did spend time with him, oh my God. So she would just like sit and talk to you and like ask me about my mom, ask me about like where I went to school, what I studied, just shit like that. They were great. They were all great.
So Saturday night, great show. Killed it.
Yeah.
What's the party like?
The party?
The party's great.
I used to do The Door.
Wow.
And yeah, that was fun.
Where is the party?
It's a different amazing restaurant every week.
Wow.
Yeah. Like just, you know, food and drinks and but I was at The Door most of the time. So I wasn't like, you know, getting drunk or anything.
And
I'm not that kind of person anyway. Like, I don't drink that much. I was just kind of happy to be there.
Let's say it was not a great show, right? Which happens.
Right.
Is the mood in the party flat?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be kind of flat, but I don't remember too much of it. Actually, I take that back. I don't think I remember any of those parties being flat. You know, I remember like Christopher Walken like stumbling around drunk. I remember Seinfeld coming in, that being a big deal because he wasn't a host, but I remember him walking in and it being very like, pay me respect, you know?
Well, yeah, at that time he was taking over the world.
I remember that being like, oh, this is a big deal that Seinfeld's coming and you know, make sure that, you know.
He's got his.
Don't piss him off in any way.
So then what happens when you come out to LA?
So I was doing I got offered like a show, like a sketch show for VH1. They were doing a sketch show.
I miss VH1.
They put me up at the Oakwood.
Great.
With like Michael Showalter and Michael Ian Black and like, we just did music sketches. So I did like, I would play like John Lennon. I would play like Liam Gallagher, shit like that.
And at that time, were you kind of like, okay, it's happening?
At that time, I was kind of like, yeah, this is it. But I knew that like a VH1 sketch show isn't necessarily going to be around for a long time.
Yeah, it ain't a rocket ship necessarily.
Yeah. And so I was like, shit, I got to get on to something else. And then once I got out to LA for that job, it just made sense to leave New York and be here. And it was so much easier. New York's so hard to live there if you don't have money. So it was like, oh, wow, I can live here for way cheaper. I can go hiking. I can have a car. I can have a dog. And I had all my friends here from New York that I had met that moved out anyway. There was, you know, there was just like this mass exodus at the time of all the comedians in New York. They all went to LA.
I think anyone who's like I understand why Seinfeld stays in New York. Because when you're worth $1 billion, you can live nice.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a driver.
Yeah.
Couple floors at his Upper West Side apartment. But like, if you're in your 70s or 80s and you're struggling and you stayed in New York, I'm like, what are you trying to prove? Go to Boca.
I agree.
Go anywhere where it's easier than this.
I agree. And if you're not going to bars anymore and restaurants, there's no point, you know, unless you're like a Broadway head.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you what was interesting that we skipped over was after that summer, I did 1 year there working as Norm's assistant. And then the summer came, I started performing. Hey, what happened? Was it 2 years later? Eventually, they called me. They said, hey, do you want to come back? And I was like, no, I'm going to take this job at MTV, which was like, I was like, it was a creative job. I was writing jokes and stuff for MTV. And then I started performing. And then maybe it was a year or two later, I auditioned for Saturday Night Live. And that was like, I did good, but I wish I had done better.
Were you like
the
on
same
the
year
stage?
Jimmy Fallon auditioned? It was like me, Zach, Jimmy Fallon. I don't know if Jimmy Fallon was there that day, but it was definitely that year. And then they flew me to New York, stayed. And that was like, that was really nerve wracking to go back there. And the people that looked at me like shit before, now they had to be like, oh, he's auditioning. And they were nice. But I think in my own head, I was like, oh, this is just like too much. It was tough.
And you were on the stage at 30
on
Rock?
On the stage. I went out. I did all my bits that were like proven in the clubs, like stuff that I knew worked. And
they warn you that they don't laugh, right?
They warned me and I forgot.
I would too.
they clearly warned me, and I forgot because I remember I got up there and I don't know why I did this, but I needed music for a bit, and I stood on stage and I was like, I need a CD player, like a boombox or something, and it was like everyone froze, everyone just stared at me. It seemed like they stared at me for 5 minutes, and then Lauren just went like, "Can we get him a box or something?" And they do that. They do like test you to see. But I did good. And I remember getting off stage, and one of the talent people came up to me and they're like, "That was so good. Like, you did such a good job, blah, 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 blah." And then I remember there was like a good month where they're like, you're in the running,
which is huge,
Yeah. And then no. And then I remember like, who is this Jimmy Fallon guy? And I remember seeing his audition and I was like, well, pretty damn good.
And that's like one of those freak, that audition specifically, it takes away nothing from your audition.
Yeah, no.
It just was one of those freak things where it was almost like they had given him the answers to the test, right?
He just fit that like Sandler. It was Sandler.
Musical, funny white guy.
And then it was Andy Samberg.
Right.
That was it. I mean, those are the, Lauren has these, that's a trope that he fills in, you know, cute, musical, heartthrobby, not heartthrob. And now it's Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
Not that Pete Davidson's a heartthrob, but he's kind of cute and they're funny. He's funny. They're the class clown. They're like the kid in school that's like, it's David.
Yeah.
David could have that spot, you know, if he was more of a sketch performer.
So you move out to LA and what transpires? How does that turn into Vine?
So I was just like married and like, you know, doing jobs in the industry, like little writing jobs, game shows, kids shows. I would write, I would go work a few days as an actor and then like doing stand up around town, but not touring because I had kids. And I was like, I don't really want to leave my kids. And I'm because I'm, I know I'm tour, I'm not going to make any money anyway. So no one's going to come see me. And so, then I was doing like a lot of one-man shows around town. I would write these like crazy one-man shows about my life and my kids and my ex-wife. At the time, it was my wife. And then that Comedy Central saw this show that I did and they were like, oh, do you want to make a movie about it? Like a really low budget thing. And I was like, yeah, sure. And so then I made this movie called Jason Nash is Married. It came out, but it took a really long time to come out because there was like a lot of problems. People lost their jobs in the meantime.
But it was like widely well received.
It was well received.
People loved it. Sure. And let's talk about the people in it. Busy Phillips.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt.
Patton, yeah.
Rob Corddry.
Yeah.
Who else?
TJ Miller. Andy Richter.
Dude. What a fucking cast.
Yeah. I would steal shots with them on weekends. I'd be like, Andy, can you come to my house at 10 o'clock on Sunday? And he, you know, they're all just really nice people. You know, that was back when I was like, I was kind of in the comedy scene and all you had was like goodwill.
Yeah. No, your tribe.
No one was making any money. Well, those guys were doing TV and stuff, but I wasn't, most of us weren't. So all I had was like friendships and a little bit of respect from people like, oh, there's Jason. He's trying to do something that's authentic. And that was all I was trying to do. I was just like, oh, I'm going to make this movie about my marriage. And then it came out and I got on Vine.
How much was the budget for the movie?
$10,000.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's beyond low budget.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they all did me favors.
I mean, $10,000 is what they spend on like 2 days on Steven Spielberg's coffee.
Yeah.
Like,
I know.
And
I know.
What'd you shoot it on?
We shot it on like a Canon with like a little mic like sitting on top. I didn't even have sound.
That's unreal.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, okay, this is all I can do. This is all I can do.
That just makes me hate Comedy Central that they handed you 10 grand and they said, make a 90-minute film.
Now. Yeah. Well, they didn't. They wanted me to make webisodes and I made them a film.
Okay, over deliver.
So don't get mad at Comedy Central.
I'm mad at them for other reasons.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. But yeah, and then that was it. You know, I mean, everything I do is like, just do what you can do. That's all I could do at the time was like, shoot another scene and hope that it like, and work it into the movie somehow and try to make it, I made the movie like backwards. You know what I mean? Like, so that was kind of interesting. And then, yeah. And so then I got Vine started and I was like, oh, I'm going to try to promote this movie, this dumb movie I made. And Vine took off. And luckily I Brittany Furlong dated this comedian and,
Adam Ray.
I know his name was
Josh Myers.
Yeah, it was Josh Myers. And Brittany would go and watch Josh do stand up. And then I would go on before Josh or after Josh, depending. And I struck up a friendship with her, whatever. She was really sweet. And then she was on Vine doing Killing It. And she called me. She's like, oh, yeah, you want to make some Vines? I was like, yeah, sure. So I made some Vines with her. And then that really elevated me, like got me a lot of followers quick because I was there early. And then I met Brandon. And Brandon elevated me like crazy. Brandon was a phenom, you know. I remember seeing Brandon's Vines and
Brandon Calvillo
and being like, wow, this kid's so funny. So I just DM'd him. I'm like, hey, do you want to make some Vines? And he was like, yeah, aren't you like 50? And I was like, yeah, I am. So then I would drive down to Fullerton on Saturdays before my kids would get up, pick up Brandon at like 8 a.m., do Vines in front of his house, and then drive up back up, you know, to spend Saturday with my kids. So I was still married then. I remember my ex-wife being like, what are you doing? Like, this is crazy. And I was like, no, I know it's going to be something. I know this is going to be something. Like, I trust me. And then I remember I was like doing okay on Vine and someone called me and they're like, hey, do you want to make, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was like $2,500 or maybe it was like less. Go to Las Vegas and make a Vine? And I was like, yeah, sure.
100% yes.
Yeah. And I was like, I remember having a big fight with my ex-wife because we had something to do that weekend. And I was like, no, this is like a big thing. Like, I just needed the money, really. It wasn't even that I thought of it as like a career, you know?
Isn't it interesting too that like your personal life at that time was becoming incredibly challenging and you're going through it with your eventually what would become your ex-wife. And then the counterpoint to that is sort of the beginning of this renaissance in your career.
Yeah.
It's interesting, like the parallel of
it's
that.
It's so interesting. You know, my daughter was upset the other day about going like back and forth from houses and stuff. And I told her straight up, I was like, you know, all the stuff that like, all the cool stuff that we get to do now, cause like I'm a YouTuber or whatever, like none of that would have come unless I like moved out and like did what I wanted to do. My ex-wife's a wonderful person.
She's
literally so funny, like so pretty, the nicest person in the world. And I really blame myself. It was like, she wanted to be in her 40s and be what a 40-year-old woman does on the weekends, which is hang out with her friends, drink wine, talk about, you know, designs, you know.
Throws.
Talk about throw pillows.
Pashminas,
whatever it is.
Sure.
Talk about Hillary Clinton, you know, and that's awesome. And that I was just sitting there dying. I was just like, I can't. Like, I can't do this. I wish I could like figure out why, but
it's not hard to figure out why.
Why? You tell me.
You were an unrealized artist.
That's really what it was. And I think that she like, God bless her. Like she accepted that. Now when I see her, she's like, oh, that's what he's meant to be doing. He's meant to be riding in David's Tesla, you know, while Zane's, you know, trying to get something funny on Sunset Boulevard on a Saturday night. And now I'm so much happier. You know, I don't have anyone in my life. And she has a boyfriend now, which is great. I'm happy for her. That was it. But just to leave like what you're supposed to be doing. So that was tough.
With how much work you do on a regular basis and sort of how married you are to the process, is there room for a person in your life?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, like I wish. I mean, I wish I would like meet somebody that was like, you know, wanted to do YouTube, but I just don't.
So what's
really tough?
What's a normal day look like for you?
Normal day, get up, you know, grab the camera, start filming, film whatever I can, go over to David's house, run over ideas with him, whiteboard stuff with him. If he's editing, watch his edit, help him with the edit. Come up with And then there's a lot of days where like I come up with ideas for my vlog that maybe can spill over into his vlog, stuff like that. That's good when there's synergy like that. But yeah, my directive is to like keep my channel going. I'm writing a book. I got a book deal, so I'm doing that. Another tour. That's it.
And what's, you know, what I've noticed about social media, right, is that you become big on YouTube and then there are these sort of proxy businesses like a tour, mm-hmm. merchandise,
yep.
a book deal,
yeah,
you know, brand deals. Mm-hmm. Is there...
That's the number one question I get.
What?
How do you make money?
Well, not make money, because I think now...
On YouTube.
I think we're all, we all sort of know to a certain extent that if you're doing well on social media, you can make a lot of dough.
Well, I just mean to like the Uber driver that picks me up and is like, what do you do? And I'm like, I'm a YouTuber. And then the next question is, how the hell does that work? Like,
right.
How do you get paid? Which I think is, I wouldn't know either.
Right. Well, I think too, the beauty of it, right, is because of like, if we're just talking about the pure aspect of making money from YouTube videos, uh-huh. which is the Google AdSense model, where
right.
they put commercials on your videos and they give you a piece of the money that they make from those partnerships. The beauty of what we do, and I've talked about this with friends, none of us have ever had a meeting with Google to mm-hmm. pitch them our channel.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a creative meeting. I've never had to ask permission.
No.
I started putting up content and money started coming into a bank account.
Right, right.
And it's like, and granted, some months were a couple $100 and other months were much more than that. But it was completely contingent on how creative could I be, how productive could I be, and how much did I want it. That's mm-hmm. kind of beautiful, especially for guys like us, where we know what it is to come from the old guard uh-huh. and have to like pray that 5 gatekeepers will let us in the kingdom.
I know.
Right?
Yeah.
Just to make a living.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And it's no different than, I like to look at it as any other piece of technology that's out there. TaskRabbit. I can find a guy for $36 to come hang these paintings. You know what I mean? Like that's the all that Silicon Valley shit. It's designed for, I'm not a well spoken person, but it's designed for like the masses, and it's designed to level the playing field, you know, which is like so nice about YouTube, which is like, okay, I have a chance. I tried to do this for 20 years, you know, and yeah. now I have a chance at it, which is like unbelievable.
Do you flirt with the idea of using it to spring in, almost it would seem like going backwards to spring into something in the theatrical world or the traditional world, or have you sort of let that go?
I'm done.
Yeah,
I let it go. It's really fun just to do this. People say all the time, like, what are you gonna do? Like, what's your dream? I'm like, this is it.
Yeah,
I don't. The place I am in my life too. I'm like, oh, like just like having a job. That's it. Like, what more would you want? Maybe Judd Apatow like was like, here's like 4 lines. For some reason, he liked me. I'd be like, oh, fuck yeah, you know, or something like that. But I mean, I don't, you know, that's not coming. So it's like, oh yeah, I don't. And it's nice not sweating anything. And that shows in your work, because for so many years, I was just sweating everything. And it's just like, oh yeah, like, you want to do a show? Let's do a stand-up show. Like, let's go. You want to do a tour? Let's do a tour. You want to write a book? Let's write a book. Like, it's just so much better than waiting around for someone to say yes. I can't do it.
And it's so goddamn time consuming.
It's so time consuming.
Ah, sitting on a set.
What about your project? Can you talk about it?
I can't talk about, I gotta, no.
It's fine.
But I am, but yeah.
I'll ask you off camera.
But it's a good balance. It's all like a good...
See, I'm not good at balancing things. I don't like it. That was why I never got anywhere for 10 years. It's because I was like, oh, I'm going to write a movie. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do this.
But here,
stand up.
Here you are balancing like 5 different sources of income.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's all like kind of playing into the same. Yeah, I guess so. I just wouldn't want to be writing a cop movie right now.
I get it.
And then like trying to go to DreamWorks and being like, oh, so-and-so likes it.
I don't know if anyone would watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if, you know, it's just, or you could make a video that gets like 5 million views and
I don't know. I know it's do you know what it is? It's just so hard.
What can you distill what you've
and there's other things I want to like I want to enjoy life. I want to go be with my kids. I don't want to be on a set.
I think that's so refreshing, and you're right. People are so obsessed with and I think this is in so many different areas, but everyone wants you to one up yourself.
Yeah.
And I think they want you to do it for them because their job has a ceiling. They're like, I'm in HR. Like, best case scenario, one day I'm head of HR.
Right.
You know, or I'm an accountant. Maybe one day I'll be a partner. But like, I love the idea of you saying, no, like what I'm doing is more than enough. And I don't need it to like, I don't need to set some unnecessary goal that perhaps wouldn't even make me happy anyway.
Right. Well, I watched this Kevin Hart documentary on Netflix. I'm a big fan of Kevin Hart. I love him so much. And he's doing so much, and
too much.
And I'm like, and the documentary is really good actually, because it kind of goes into why he's doing so much, because of the way he was like brought up and stuff, and the stuff that happened to him as a kid, which I think is what they're intimating at. But like, you know, to leave Wyatt and Charlie for 300 days on a tour, like, no,
yeah,
no, I can't. Like, I don't want to, you know.
Do you know who Paul Gilmartin is?
Of course.
Yeah, he's your buddy, right?
Yeah.
He talks about on his podcast that he had a friend who went and climbed Mount Everest, and he got to the top, and then Paul asked him, and when you got to the top, did you find your father's love?
It's really funny.
You know?
That's such a Paul Gilmartin joke. That's really funny.
It's very Paul.
Yeah.
So my last like two questions. Working with someone like David, who's crushing it so hard and is having so much success, can you distill down one or two observations you've made over your time with him that you think has led to so much of his success?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I love this question. Okay, so the one thing that he's really good at is he doesn't hold on to things at all. So many of us will be like, I wanted this and I wanted that, and why didn't I make more money, whatever. If there's any kind of like disagreement amongst us, he's the first person to pick up the text, to call, and literally will say, let's figure this out right now. So he never rests on anything like that, which is, I think, is a really good quality. I think I mentioned before too, he has no ego about ideas, which I think is really good. And he's tenacious. He is just like your example with Big Bird and the cops. He's fucking tenacious. I mean, he's just, he will go to the end of he will scorch the earth to get that bit. It doesn't matter. I saw him. One of the best things I ever seen him do. I learned so much from this guy. It's so crazy. And he's so young. It's so humbling to learn something from such a young person. You know, but I've learned so much from him. And he was pranking Brandon, convincing Brandon that that there was an earthquake in the San Andreas Fault. This was the bit, right? This was the thing he was doing, his vlog. So we hired all these extras. We hired, I think, 40, 60 extras. It was at Bellingham, when we used to live at Bellingham. We come in, I don't know how I can't remember how we did it, but there was a news report on TV or whatever. Brandon's flipping out. And David's got the camera on him. He's got him hook, line, and sinker. There's a crying baby in the street. There's a cop car. We run outside. I get in my car. I drive down. I come back. The road's blocked. Brandon's flipping out. And then something happens where something goes wrong, where Brandon, who's not an idiot, is like, this is a fucking prank. This is a fucking prank. And anyone else would have been like, fuck, it's up. And David fucking just hangs in there. He hangs in there to the point where he reconvinces Brandon that it is real. Like, I don't know how he did it. I did it. I watched him do it. Because as soon as Brandon said that, I was like, fuck, it's over. And then, you know, he pulled it off. So that's just an example. He's just so tenacious. You know,
I remember I don't know. You told me this story, and I've repeated it many times, and it speaks to his work ethic. And it was something that I was so impressed by with David. But this is when he had a, you know, 3-video-a-week cadence that he kept up for what, over 400 videos. Mm-hmm. And you and David had been invited by Casey Neistat to this really cool Samsung event at Lincoln Center.
Okay.
This was like 2018. So you flew out, and it's like really fancy, cool people there, and it's going to be this big show.
Uh-huh.
And I remember you guys get back the next day, and I said to you, how was the show? And you were like, it was great, but David didn't see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I said, what do you mean? And you said, it was Wednesday night, and a vlog had to go up, and David was outside Lincoln Center editing the vlog.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He just carries the laptop with him. Crazy.
And no thought of like, you know what? This is life, and this is once in a lifetime. I should see this. It was like, no.
Well, keep in mind, it was the premiere of a new phone, so it wasn't that important.
Okay, fair enough.
But it actually, it was a really cool event with like a lot of like, you know, short films. And
I don't think it would have mattered then, Jason. I think it could have been the fucking Oscars.
It could have been. It definitely could have been the Oscars. I mean, I think he tried to bring his, I think he tried to edit at the Streamies one year, and people were like, you can't. Yeah. But yeah, and that's what's great about him. You know, he's like, he's just remained very humble. He's very loyal. He's loyal to a fault too. Like, you know, there's people that like me, like, sure, he could get rid of.
No, that's not true.
But
don't fucking say that about yourself.
He's so loyal.
No, it's because you have the goods, because you offer him something great. Listen, we've all seen, you know, God bless him, but he's not like, he doesn't suffer fools. Like, if you're not servicing the agenda.
Oh, sure.
You gotta beat it.
he's pretty magical kid. And I'm happy I met him. Happy I met you too.
I'm happy. Do you want to talk about your star-making performance on Drake and Josh before
sure,
we go?
Sure, I'd love to.
What was that like?
Oh man, I was working on a prank show with a bunch of girls. The girls were called the Rad Girls. They were like from like Northern California.
So bad.
They were like, it was like when Jackass was big. So of course MTV was like, we need a female version of this.
Obviously.
Yeah. Or no, it wasn't even MTV. It was Fuse. Like those were the kind of jobs I was working. It was fine. Like, great. You know, it pays good. You just come up with bits all day for these girls to do pranks. And I remember I was working and my friend Eric Friedman, he just called me and he was like, I was like, hey, I know you want to be an actor. And I was like, yeah, I do. He's like, well, we have, you know, I have a part on Drake and Josh. And I was like, oh, sick. Awesome.
Did you know the show?
Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. And I've told you, like, I would always watch you and be like, wow, that guy's really funny. just so naturally funny.
Thank
carried
you, Jason.
The whole fucking show. And then I remember just going there and I had my line, are you okay? And I remember being in the dressing room being like, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
So good.
Doing that over and over again. I was a waiter and went on, did my line. And I remember seeing you on set and I definitely like remember making a point of like, I'm going to fucking say hi to that guy because I think he's funny, like in my head. And that was probably, I probably thought about that for like an hour, just, you know, sitting there, like just finding the right moment. And I remember I walked over to you and I was like, I don't know what I said, but I probably said something like, hey, what's up? You're really funny. Like, this is so cool. And I remember you being like, oh, so nice to meet you. Thank you. But you were busy. Like you were literally like getting direction and Drake was next to you. And I didn't say anything to Drake, which I hope he wasn't offended.
I'm sure he was.
Maybe. And maybe I shook Drake's hand too. I don't remember. But I remember making a point of being like, I have to say hello to him. I don't know why. And then I remember we had to stay really late and that was it. And now I still get tweets about it.
And here we are today, co-stars.
Yeah, I know.
I love it.
Isn't that crazy?
Okay. Last question. The thing I ask everyone on the podcast,
yeah.
What are your one or two Jason Nash commandments, truths that you've discovered that you'd want to impress upon someone else?
I love this. We had this one yesterday. We were going to give somebody $10,000 yesterday for a video and they were like not great. And eventually they were so not great that we went somewhere else. And,
what does not great mean?
They weren't nice. And just show up with a really good attitude. that will get you so far. And I can't stress it enough. Just like, even if you're in a bad mood, just try to lift everybody up around you, because it goes so far. People want to be around, you know, positive people. And you have to remember too, like, everybody's going through something. So it's really important to, like, that's one of my commandments. Another one is probably, oh, don't do too much.
That one's just for me, audience.
Yeah, don't. Well, you don't do too much.
Trust me.
Are you?
You ever seen any of my performances? It's all too much.
No. I don't mean. That's funny. No, I mean, like, for so many years when I was working, I was like trying all these things and trying to do all these things, and then finally when I started to do YouTube, I literally sat down with like a piece of paper and I was like, I am just doing YouTube. And that was like the most freeing thing ever. Only one thing to think about. And then people would, and I had directed two movies. So at that time when I started doing YouTube, I was getting phone calls like, hey, do you want to write and direct this thing for no money? Like, you know, here's $10,000 for you to like write a script. I was like, no, nothing. Like, I'm not doing anything. I'm doing YouTube. That's it. And people were like, what, why are you stopping? Or like, hey, we have an audition for you. It's at 1156 Riverside. And I'd be like, no, I'm not doing it. And then everyone was like, what? Why not? This is great. And I'm like, no, I'm doing YouTube. And that to me was really freeing and really liberating. And I think it's something that people in regular jobs know. Like, yeah, I'm a doctor. I go to be a doctor every day. Yeah, I'm a trash man. But for us, like for people in the entertainment industry, like focus on one thing. Even my son, he's trying to learn five instruments right now. And my mother and I pulled him aside and were like, hey, guitar, that's the one you're best at.
Yeah.
Just do the guitar. He's like, yeah, I know, but I want to do. Josh does a great impression of my son, by the way. But, you know, the violin is like so, and I want to be good at all of them.
My desire is to be a multi-instrumentalist. I don't know if you're familiar with some of the greats, but Mozart actually played six instruments, and you're stifling my creativity. But thank you, Dad, for your insight, because I know you do care about me.
I took him to a Herbie Hancock show.
Sick. Watermelon Man.
Yeah, he was like, I want to go see Herbie Hancock.
And
I
God
was
bless like, that kid. Like,
okay. So we get there, we get in the ticket, we get there, and we're sharing a box with this like 70-year-old African-American man and his wife, and they start playing, and it's unlistenable. It is unlistenable. Josh is like, like that. And I just looked over at Wyatt, who was like 13 at the time, and he was just like, yeah. And then the African-American dude, he was like, my man. He's like, this kid gets it. And they were in heaven together. And I couldn't even listen to it.
God bless.
Not a great story.
I love it. You were like, what? You were like, can we get some U2? Do you know any U2, Herbie?
It's just not music that I get.
I get that.
You know? It's cacophonous.
I love it. He's a Herbie Hancock's a national treasure. All right, I gotta close it. I'm kidding. Love you, dude.
Love you too.
Thank you.
All right.
That was it. That was Jason. Wow. Come on, guys. Really? Can you believe it?
Yeah.
That was it. And that was great. You don't have to say it. I'll say it. If that was podcasting. That was people talking back and forth. So that's cool. All right. Anyway, guys, I'll see you soon. I love you. Take care. All the best. Bye.